You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When we think of Michigan's contribution to the war effort during the Second World War, we tend to think of the arsenal of democracy, Rosie the Riveters helping build thousands and thousands of B-24 Liberator bombers at Willow Run. But the American war effort also depended mightily on the Soo Locks, to the point where the Army feared a Nazi attack on the locks. It's a piece of history worth revisiting, even as Michigan's U.S. senators and representatives today announce a new bipartisan bill aimed at getting $1 billion to upgrade the Soo Locks. With us now is Bernie Arbic. He's author of Upbound, Downbound, A History of the Soo Locks, and City of the Rapids, which is a history of Sault Ste. Marie. Bernie Arbic, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Cynthia.
Bernie, why was the U.S. military so worried about a potential attack by the Germans on the Soo Locks during World War II?
Well, in that day, about 90% of the iron ore that was used in the steel mills that were, of course, producing tanks and jeeps and so forth came from Lake Superior ports, Minnesota and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so the Soo Locks was a potential choke point for getting that iron ore to the steel mills. It was felt that if the locks could be disabled, it would be a huge hindrance to that war effort.
I'm curious what ways they perhaps thought that the Germans might be able to disable the Soo Locks.
There were three possibilities that were considered. One, of course, was just getting saboteurs in the area who could, on a land-based operation, somehow disable them. A second method that was considered was what I think would have been suicidal-type bombing missions, but long-distance bombers from Norway going across the Arctic Circle could reach the Soo Locks, presumably, and drop bombs on it. And then the third way that seems maybe a little far-fetched, but I guess they did consider it possible, was if German submarines could get into Hudson's Bay with parts of airplanes that could then be assembled, perhaps taking off on the ice and carrying out torpedo bombing raids. So those were the three possibilities. I think they were all considered to be fairly remote, but because of the importance of the locks, they had to be still considered.
And so what kind of defenses does the military did they put up to protect the locks during World War II?
Some interesting things. I'll mention barrage balloons first, and that probably doesn't mean much to any of your listeners, but basically what they were large helium-filled and later, I think, hydrogen-filled, essentially dirigibles, or very large balloons, kind of like the Goodyear blimp that you see, that were tethered on cables up to 2,000 feet long. And from those balloons, there dangled a whole series of other cables. And so the approaches to the locks were essentially surrounded by these barrage balloon emplacements. If a torpedo bomber did try to come in to drop a torpedo into the approaches to the locks, they'd have to run a gauntlet of these steel cables. And, of course, if they hit one, they would just be torn apart. So that was one of the defenses. And from what I read, I believe it was one of only two or three places in North America where barrage balloons were actually deployed.
And I know it's not hard to find photos of barrage balloons, and I'm thinking even of D-Day plus 4 or 5 when you get shots of, for example, Omaha Beach. They put those up to protect that beachhead. They were, very densely packed, weren't they?
And you know, that's an interesting point. During World War II, there are not many photographs of barrage balloons at the Soo because of security concerns. I was told that every day agents would visit the local photo shops to see if any photographs had been developed that could possibly be security risks. So we have a few historical photographs, but surprisingly not very many, and also of gun emplacements. That would be another defense effort. There was a unit called the 100th Coastal Artillery Unit, which was anti-aircraft guns. And I've never seen a really good photograph of any of those, but there were quite a few emplacements in the hills surrounding the Soo. And even in Canada, by the way, there was upwards of 1,000 U.S. military that basically were assigned to Fort Brady that were stationed in nearby areas in Canada.
So there was no German attack, no Nazi sabotage, and the locks made it through World War II untouched. Now, has there ever been a breakdown for some other reason that caused a long shutdown of the locks?
I don't think there's ever been one that caused, you know, anything like a disabling shutdown. There's been very short ones, certainly, and there was one, actually, it was before we entered World War II. It was in October of 1941. There's a railroad bridge that crosses the St. Mary's River just above the locks, and because it crosses the approach canals to the locks, they have to be movable railroad bridge. So there's two different types there. At that time, one of them was a swing bridge, which could swing 90 degrees and, you know, let the boats through the canal. And another was what we call locally a jackknife bridge, but the proper name is a bascule bridge, which has two leaves that swing up, and when it closes, the trains can pass. And in October of 1941, a train was crossing, and that bascule bridge essentially collapsed, and a locomotive and the tender behind it went into the approach canal. There was actually two railroad men that lost their life in that. Immediately they thought this could be sabotage, but they very quickly decided that was not the case. It was just mechanical failure of the bridge. But what that did then, with this locomotive in the bottom of the approach canal, and this would be on the Lake Superior side, ships couldn't pass. And at that time, that was the canal that was servicing the outer two locks, which were the main locks in use at that time. So it did disable shipping, and probably something like within 24 hours, there was 60 ships anchored in Whitefish Bay above the locks that couldn't pass through.
Hmm.
And so that really made the point, boy, this is a real crisis possibility could occur here.
And certainly, you know, looking ahead to our present time, we had early last year, a U.S. Department of Homeland Security report that indicated that if that big lock, the Poe Lock, largest lock, were to be shut down for 6 months, the nation would be plunged into recession. We could see some 11 million jobs lost across the nation and, you know, halting auto and appliance production. So it certainly seems the locks are as strategically important to the U.S. today as ever.
Yeah, I have seen that report. It's got a very telling title, doesn't it? The Perils of Efficiency, kind of connected with the on-time manufacturing and so forth, that there just aren't the stockpiles you might think of iron ore at the steel mills. And so, yes, when you think of the auto industry and all the metal that goes into appliances and railroad tracks and cars and so forth, yeah, there would be a huge impact on things that go far beyond the steel mill workers and the iron mine workers and so forth.
Bernie Arbic of Sault Ste. Marie is the author of Upbound, Downbound. It's a history of the Sioux Locks. Also, City of Rapids, a history of Sault Ste. Marie. And I guess it's proof that the more things change, the more they remain the same.
In a way it is, yeah. And if I can just try to inject a little bit of humor, when I came up with that title, City of the Rapids, for Sault Ste. Marie, what I meant to imply, I didn't call it City by the Rapids or City at the Rapids. I said City of the Rapids, because the rapids have shaped our history before a white man was here, really. That's the reason that the Native Americans concentrated in this area. There's an abundance of whitefish in the rapids. And, of course, that's the reason that the locks are necessary in the first place, with the difference in level of Lake Superior and the lower lakes, roughly 21 feet. The locks are needed in order for ships to be able to manage that difference. And when I was thinking of a title, I never really seriously considered it, but I thought of Sault Ste. Marie, the real Grand Rapids, because the rapids are huge. They're 3/4 of a mile, at least in their natural state. They were 3/4 of a mile across, about as long in terms of the fall. So it's just had, the rapids have had such a huge impact in shaping our history.
Bernie Arbic, it was great to talk with you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, you're very welcome.